Welcome to season 6, episode 7. 3. 6.
Oh, yeah, 6, isn't it?
Yeah. Stop shouting 7 at me. Welcome to season 6, episode 3 of Weekend at Crombie's. Tonight, we'll be looking at Action Jackson. Welcome, dear listener, to Weekend at Crombie's. I'm Hugh, mellow out.
And I'm Dr. James Evans, Esquire. You have this nickname. What is it? Excitement? Enthusiasm? Esprit de corps?
Yes, indeed. For tonight, we are going right back into the 80s. We've had far too much of this highbrow stuff in this season. So we're going feet first into the action films of the 1980s with Esprit de Corps Jackson.
I tell you what, the 80s were a wild time, weren't they?
Oh, my goodness. I mean,
I miss them so much. I miss that decade of filmmaking so much.
So much cocaine has gone into the movies of the 80s. And God bless it. Without further ado, we're doing Action Jackson, which is a Carl Weathers vehicle.
And there aren't many Carl Weathers vehicles, are there?
There aren't many Carl Weathers vehicles. Oh, I got stuck in that. I got Action Jackson perfectly. I can't say Carl Weathers now. There aren't many Carl Weathers vehicles. No, and this one is quite the vehicle. Without further ado, we'll begin, and then we'll say what we thought about it. It's Detroit. Which, as an aside, I always think is probably one of the best American cities for kind of this kind of gritty.
Oh, I agree completely. Yeah. It's a bit run down, isn't it? It's ungentrified, and there's always it's obviously what with the factories and stuff like that. It's all very working class, and yeah, it's
being
cracking.
A big car town as well. Yeah, it's not just crime things. Like there was a movie with again Richard Pryor and Jesse Coach and Harvey Keitel.
Yes, and Harvey Keitel. Yeah, exactly. What's that called? I can't remember.
It was Blue Collar with the three of them in a car factory in Detroit.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. Yeah, Blue Collar. It's a really, really good film as well, directed by Paul Schrader, who also wrote Taxi Driver. And it really gives, it's a really evocative period piece, isn't it?
Yeah. And on the other side of it, RoboCop, based in Detroit.
Yeah, as well, which is really good,
So Detroit kind of holds this place, this odd place in American city. Like, it's not New York or Chicago, but like Detroit's like, if you want to get gritty, you go to Detroit.
You do, with and of course, it's got that Motown. It's got that Motown flavor as well, which is another aspect of the filmmaking.
It's not just, as we say, gritty and raw. It's like this. It's got a character to it in the way that maybe a lot of Americans don't have that same kind of character. But anyway, we're in Detroit, we jump straight to again. A couple of beat cops have pulled over a purse snatcher.
There's a coda though, isn't it? There's a pre-sequence of.
Oh my goodness! I missed the pre-sequence. Yes, of course.
With Mary Ellen Trainer, who was also in Die Hard.
The phrase "also in Die Hard" or "also in Predator" is going to come in a lot because half this cast—it's like a repertory company. Because there's so many actors.
I know. Devereaux White's in it.
Bill Duke, and Robert Davi.
Yes, obviously, yeah. Carl Weathers.
There are a lot of people who either in Predator or Die Hard or both. Remarkable. And I wonder, was it just because they were all in the same set and they knew each other? Or did they just kind of round them up after and say, hey, we want to make another movie quick? It won't take long. Let's knock one out quick.
I know we haven't even started the synopsis of the plot yet, but Joel Silver, who was the producer of this and Predator, was a close friend of Carl Weathers. And Carl Weathers recommended a film based on the title Action Jackson that he created and thought sounded good whilst filming Predator.
Joel Silver really has a kind of a body count behind his ear in terms of movies.
He really does.
Kind of remarkable.
Yeah, but come on, Predator in this.
Oh, absolutely.
80s, talk about 80s. Woof. Anyway,
The rough course. Anyway, so there's a code. So it begins with kind of a well-to-do union official dictating a letter to his secretary. And again, apart from being a bit sleazy, nothing much comes of it until sort of like half a dozen ninjas.
You can only describe them as ninjas.
Ninjas, but who look like a Swedish rock band at the same time, because they've all got this long, blonde, curly hair.
Well, one of them looks like they should be in Spinal Tap.
Yes, yes. So kind of, Eurotrash ninjas crash through the ceiling and brutally murder this guy.
But they also vanish. They just vanish. Yeah, they do it.
Because in the end, they don't just kill him. They kill him with a rocket launcher, so he falls out of a window on fire. So that's the other coda. A man has been murdered, and we know not why. And then we cut to kind of, you know, scenes of the Detroit city with a purse snatcher who does very badly because his victim ends up beating him up because he's this formidable granny who won't take her purse being snatched. But then he's this snatcher's kind of taken in by two beat cops who are threatening him, saying, "We're going to get you. We're going to face you with Action Jackson." It's like, who is Action Jackson?
Yeah. Also, one of them played by Biff Tannen.
Biff Tannen, yes. Either in Predator nor in Die Hard. Yeah, Biff Tannen's in it.
Yeah, but also in a really minor role.
Yeah, and he looks small. It's like,
it does. He looks weedy, whereas in Back to the Future, he's a tough guy, isn't he?
I probably would say when you're acting opposite Michael J. Fox as opposed to Carl Weathers, the difference is going to be quite evident.
I suppose you're right. Anyone's
going to look big next to Michael J. Fox, and it's going to look small next to Carl Weathers. Anyway, so they're building up this Sergeant Jericho Jackson. It's like, they say that the military carved him out of wood.
They say his mother married his father.
Yeah, and all this kind of stuff. Basically, Sergeant Jericho Jackson is a bad guy. And you don't want to mess with him. Again, they take him to the department. This person actually kind of breaks his handcuffs and makes a run for it, but happens to run right into the desk of Sergeant Jackson, spills coffee over his reports, and then just looks up, and we get a first look at Carl Weathers, who basically stands to his full height, brandishing biceps, and just says, "Mellow out," at which point this poor guy just faints.
I mean, in fairness, he has some physique, doesn't he? And you get to see a lot of his 40. Yeah, I know. Well, you make that sound like he's ancient.
Really?
Can you imagine this? Wait for it. Sit down. Is there a chair handy? He's nearly 40.
He's in pretty good nick for nearly 40.
There's not an ounce of fat on him.
Absolutely.
Incredible.
I would say when I was nearly 40, I didn't look half so good.
I didn't have an ounce of muscle on me when I was 40.
I was the exact opposite. The two of us together would have made two complete human beings if we just divided up the fat and muscle equally. But yes, he looks fantastic for his age and for any age, in fact.
That in the late 30s, he's effectively putting out to pasture.
Well, let's put it this way. This is the 1980s. People aged faster.
That is true. Yeah, that is true. He does look about 60.
Yeah, late 40s now is nothing, but late 40s in the 80s is like, you managed to survive all the cigarette smoke and cocaine and whatever else has gone around. So, nonetheless, we get to the plot of which, a union man, the head of the Automobile Members Association, has been murdered, and Action Jackson is kind of, he wants in on the case, but basically his boss, played by Bill Duke, so Captain Earl Armbruster.
he doesn't look like a captain, does he? I'm sorry, Bill.
No, he looks like a special forces guy who somehow escaped the Predator and found an ill-fitting suit.
It's the ill-fitting suit that does it, I think.
But anyway, he does the whole kind of thing like, "Damn it, Jackson, you're a loose cannon. That's why you got busted down from lieutenant." We get a little epic exposition that Jackson, he busted the son of a prominent industrialist. And Peter Delaplane.
Played by Craig D. Nelson.
We'll see him.
Acting chops there. We also find out at this point that Action is a Harvard Law School.
It's
never mentioned again.
Yeah, but they're remarkably good on it, and a former track athlete. They give us the entire biography as we walk through the precinct. It's like, "Hey, Jackson, I know you're at Harvard Law School and you were a former athlete, but you got busted banned from lieutenant." Basically, he did it because Delaplane's son was apparently a sexual deviant, and when Jackson took him in, he broke his arm. Wasn't nice about it because he's a noble character that thinks the criminals should be treated like scumbags. But he ruffled the wrong feathers, and that's why he got busted down to sergeant for the last 2 years.
This is another reason why it's just made in the 80s. It's because this is Reaganomics, isn't it?
Police brutality.
Yes, it's absolutely normal. Yeah, but criminals are scum.
Absolutely. So it's like, "You broke the kid's arm, he had a spare." But so he's been relegated to boring desk work, no action to be had for Action Jackson. But he's been then told, you know, go to this local citizenship awards and you know, wear a tuxedo, make nice. And the reason he's been sent there is that Peter Delaplane, Crotty Nelson, is being given like Man of the Year or something.
He needs to prove that he can become a lieutenant again, doesn't he? By not doing anything. Right, and he obviously fails miserably.
Yeah, he's standing at the back of the room scowling when an attractive young woman called Sharon Stone looking very young, somewhere between
Alan Quarterman in the Lost City of Gold and Basic Instinct,
King Solomon's Mind. Do you know, by the way, how she got cast in King Solomon's Mines?
No, I don't.
It was because, again, the producer had seen Romancing the Stone and seen it as that kind of movie and just said to the guys, get me that stone woman.
Really?
Allegedly. That's the apocryphal story.
Okay. That's apocryphal, isn't it? That is.
Yeah, but I can well believe it.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, so she comes on, again, looking... Again, you think so far quite femme fatale, even though the character is not like that at all. So she kind of turns up and they have a bit of banter, you know, like, oh, do you like this guy? No, I hate this guy. She goes, I bet I can change your mind. And then she sashes off towards him, revealing that she is Patrice Delaplane, his wife. So there's a bit of to and fro there. And again, Jackson meets Delaplane and, you know, immediately hits the wrong note. They start insulting each other with no regards.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, they're as bad as each other.
Yeah, it's like, how are you? How are you, you demoted lieutenant? I'm bad. How's your scumbag son? He's still in prison.
Yeah. Are there any openings in prison for him? Nudge, wink, wink.
But then we cut back to, again, a yacht where another union official, these union officials, I mean, they have high-rise buildings, they have yachts.
Of course they do. This is the 80s. This is Thatcher. These are Thatcher's union officials. Well, of course they're millionaires. I don't think
Scargill had a yacht and several gunmen. But this guy has a yacht and several gunmen.
Have you not seen the comic strip version of
Strike!
No, but my point is, this is the 80s version of what a union official was. You know, it's the millionaire living it up.
Absolutely.
Taking backhanders.
So once again, the yuppie ninjas come in and kill all his bodyguards. And then again, they do have inventive ways of killing. They handcuff a briefcase to him, which contains a bomb. And then
Why do they do that?
Yeah, it's
no need.
But he blows up and so does the yacht.
I mean, this is the 80s, isn't it? This is why they did that, so that there's a huge boat that explodes.
Huge explosion. Although I will say that the ninja's kind of stealthy escape is putting a little rubber raft is slightly less dramatic than sliding down rappelling lines on the building. But they put away. So, you know, these union officials, one by one, they're being felled. What's going to happen? What can happen? I think, Action is then, he gets a call from kind of basically sweaty informant, played
Tony
by Moretti. Robert Davi.
Yeah, Tony he's Moretti. Not in it much. I thought he'd be, I remember him being in it a lot more, but yeah, he's only in it for about 5 minutes.
He's in one scene. He basically sweats a lot, tells Jackson, they're coming for me. And he basically says, you know, Delaplane is taking out the union officials one by one. Jackson goes, I'll look into this, leaves immediately. A guy shows up and kills him.
Yeah, but again, it's a weird way of killing him because he shows up as a delivery guy and asks him to sign something. And I think the box is going to be a bomb or something. Yeah. Or he's going to shoot him through the box. But he doesn't. He just gets a gun out and shoots him. So what was the whole delivery guy spiel then?
It's so he can use the word COD.
Yeah.
Because it's either cash on delivery or what's the other one? No.
Yes.
What's the COD for dead? Like corpse on display or something?
Isn't it? Yeah,
there's a COD like that means dead as well. Yeah. It's probably not corpse on display.
I like the fact that hitman then has thought long and hard about his outfit to meet the quip.
Absolutely. That's going to be the last thing he ever hears. He wants it to be funny. When you want victims to go, God, that was a good line. Yeah. Your lifeblood pumps out of him. He's like, oh, he got me there, didn't he? COD, yeah, good one, nice one.
Light
nice one.
Applause as the blood trickles out of his mouth.
Meanwhile, Jackson again goes to meet Delaplane. He's having lunch with a union official and Mrs. Delaplane. Again, basically just storms up saying, I know you're killing people, wink.
I think he's an idiot.
it's not subtle to you. It's like,
but at the end, he shows him this picture of someone dead, and then at the end, he goes, I'm sorry, Mrs. Delaplane, if that offended you. And it walks off. Donnie doesn't walk polite, up, does he? He's, I suppose he's polite, yeah.
But it is like, yeah, he throws a corpse on the table and goes, yeah, that's you, isn't it? And Deborah goes, you'll never prove it, basically.
He's got nothing else, has he?
Yeah, but he decides... But that's kind of sparked Ms. Delaplane's suspicions. So she kind of does this thing of sneaking around the house, where she eavesdrops and kind of hears the butler basically organising another murder. And is like, what can this mean?
And the butler was, we've seen the butler before as well, in Darkman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he plays one of the, one of Liam Neeson's fake, you know, masks, as it were.
Oh, yes. I know. I remember now. Yeah. But we show Mr. Delaplane kind of runs out and is like, talking to his husband saying, can I speak with you a word? But he's on the phone to Italy. It's like, do you know how much this costs?
Yeah, he is, isn't he? I can't talk now.
And he's a great
industrialist, isn't he?
Yes, but we should wind back a little bit because he's not very faithful to Mrs. Delaplane, because we have cut to a club scene where Delaplane is the only part of the audience being serenaded by the house band, the lead singer of which is Vanity playing Sidney Ash. So she basically sings a solo for him, and then they retire up to the room upstairs where she basically takes her dress off for. I don't know. You think they're about to have sex, but they're not, because then he just gives her heroin and she passes out.
It's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like, did he just want a naked cuddle?
It's like, topless naked cuddle.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, if the opportunity presented itself.
Well, speaking of things that sets in the 80s, it's like, obviously, many, many scenes, many movies, and of course, lots of TV shows now involve nudity. It's rare to find it so utterly gratuitous. It's basically like, they're having a conversation. Isn't it about time she took her top off? Yeah, let's get on with that.
Well, it's the same thing with Sharon Stone in a bit as well. For some reason, she comes out. We didn't need to see the scene of her in the shower. It's completely...
She's in a sauna. She's having a sauna.
She's in a sauna, isn't she? Yeah, thinking.
A thoughtful sauna. Yeah, but didn't need that, but dear.
No.
After her thoughtful sauna, Patrice hears the butler planning the murder, and she kind of tries to talk to Delaplane, but at that moment, then she thinks, I'd better get out of here. But she is, Action Jackson pops on the door, and she thinks, I'll be safe with him, which is obviously the worst mistake she can make. Because...
Also, if listeners are worried at this point, just rest assured, we are 10 minutes into the film.
We'll try and speed it along. So she basically tells Jackson everything she knows, and then someone tries to assassinate him by running him over. So Jackson now, he's driving a cab and tries to run him down. Jackson then sprints after the cab, jumps on the roof.
How does he do this? I mean, I know he's a track athlete, I guess, but he might be running at 40 miles an hour.
He literally is keeping pace with a speeding car. And then he jumps onto the roof, and he's sliding around the roof. And then the car breaks and he gets flung off the car. And rather than being dead, he just gets back up again.
And jumps over it.
When he says to the driver, throw your gun away. I haven't got a gun. Come on. Run me over like a man. The driver thinks, okay. As he's running him over, Jackson leaps the taxi and the driver smashes into a wall, but then escapes.
Of course. So also, it's all action. In the lead up to the end, there's an incredible explosion with a truck.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just randomly as well.
Yes.
How does the truck explode? Just because a car has nudged it.
I think it was basically, they was like, it's time for an explosion now. It's like...
I so miss the 80s.
Yeah. So Patrice has now gone back to her husband. But as we say, her first scene, quite femme fatale.
Yeah.
Next scene, a bit gormless. The final scene, very gormless, because she's basically saying to someone who she knows is pretty dodgy and murderous now, I'm very worried. I told Sergeant Jackson everything I knew. That's okay, isn't it?
about me killing off the union leaders. Yeah, that's fine.
The other plane kind of calls me for one last embrace and then promptly murders her. So that's that. And then they use her body to frame Sergeant Jackson. But we don't know that's
not very well staged, particularly, because why do they presume it's Action Jackson?
Well, she's in his apartment.
Yes, I missed that.
Do you know what? That wasn't well established either, but yes, so we'll come to that. So Jackson is now following other leads. He finds Sidney Ash.
I missed that completely. I spent the rest of the film thinking, why are they chasing Action Jackson?
I think for the same reason why something had to blow up for the same.
Yes. Because that's, well, that's the in the end, that's where I went with it.
Yeah. Yeah. But Jackson is now chasing down Sidney Ashby, saying, you know, testify against Delaplane, you know, he's dangerous. This is not going. No, it doesn't even say that. Sidney Ash has just completed her set, so has had a kind of a post wind down.
He's just there.
Well, she has.
I can't remember why he's there.
Just an enormous bodyguard. Who's like saying, you know, you can't see Miss Sydney, she's after her set. So Jackson punches him and the bodyguard doesn't flinch. So Jackson punches him again and the bodyguard goes, you know, if you do that one more time, I'm going to have to break you in two. So Jackson goes, okay, I'm leaving now. And then just runs at him and manages to hit him with such force, he breaks through the door and knocks him unconscious. Sydney takes this in her stride, is like, oh, you must really want to see me.
Well, she's off her face.
She spends the next 10 minutes off her face, so she's not a great witness to anything. But she says, oh, I'll get in your car. So he drives around in his Lamborghini or his Corvette. It's not even that. So it's a, what's it? It's an Impala. It's American steel.
Yeah.
He's very proud of his car. So she drives around basically saying, you know, do you want to have any fun? And he's like, can you please focus and testify? At which point he drives to his apartment and finds the police have surrounded it as the ambulance because Patrice's body has been dumped in his apartment. So he's framed. He's got to go on the run now. So he continues on the run to this rundown hotel where he's a friend of his, a former boxer.
Kid Sable,
who, I only recognised the actor because he was in the very first scene of Terminator. He has a very recognisable voice. It's incredibly raspy.
Yeah, exactly. Also, he's. Have you seen Weird Science?
I have, yes.
So they in the scene where they're smoking pot and they pretend to be black.
Oh.
Is yeah, I know. It's not. It's based on his voice. The impression is Chino Fats Williams' voice.
My goodness.
Yeah.
So anyway, he runs a very rundown hotel, but gives them room to stay in. Again, so Sydney is basically like, well, if you're not going to sleep with him, what are you, gay?
Yeah, you're either queer or you're a cop.
She goes, well, I'm not queer. Which is almost like establishes for the audience because Vanity is lying on his bed saying, have sex with me. And apparently, it's, you know, why wouldn't anyone want to have sex with somebody?
I may have a very homosexual moustache, but I am not queer.
And in fact, before they go to this hotel, this is another strange part. They go to Vanity's place, which probably blows up. He's like, we're going to your place. Don't turn the lights on. And as soon as she opens the fridge to find
it
blows up. And it's like, how? What? Why? Why is Delaplane trying to kill Sydney?
I don't know.
And does he have like someone staking it out with a rocket launcher waiting for a light to go?
It gets to a point where it's just completely nonsensical. But I also noticed in her apartment is a mannequin next to the fridge, which is never commented on, but as the camera pans across, you only see it like fleetingly a couple of times. As the camera pans across from the door to the fridge, you see this mannequin. It's not commented on and it's not mentioned, and I wondered whether that was just one of the crew who were accidentally in shot. It's honestly, it's so weird. If you get a chance, watch it again. It's weird.
Oh right, I'll have to watch out for that. But pressing on, We wake up in the next morning. The drugs are finally worn off Sydney, so she's got a hangover. Yeah. But I suppose in the balance of gratuity, we then see Action Jackson coming out of the shower with a towel wrapped around him.
I suppose that is fair enough, isn't it?
Ounce of muscle.
Yeah, cuts. Carl Weathers is the equivalent of Vanity and Sharon Stone, isn't he? I mean, come on. There's a scene later on as well when he's chained up and he flexes his bicep muscles, and thinking, it's all sinew and muscle. It's incredible.
Indeed. But yes, so...
Sorry, I'm starting to swear.
You need to lie down. So Jackson has now gone off to... This is a very strange thing. So I think he does some investigating and then has to...
Finally. Well, he's up until this point, everything that happens just happens to him. So he's told by the informant about the plot. He doesn't find anything else out.
No, this is where I think at this point he has to rescue Sydney from taking more heroin, where he just beats up a drug dealer and throws him out the window. But then they go to a pool hall where they can find their contact. The contact apparently, again, he basically asks around and they go, oh, I'll show you in the back room. And the guy opens up a cupboard to find a jar of testicles. Yeah. Action is not at this point on edge. He's like, what's this, I wonder? That's the informant, and the guy basically hits him over the back of the head. So Jax is taken prisoner, and they're threatening to castrate him if he doesn't say why he's looking for these people. At which point Sydney comes in, and kind of contributes something to the investigation by saying, oh, my brother's not a detective. He's loopy. He pretends to be an evangelical preacher. You know, he's no danger. At which point Jackson picks up on the cue, and you get this wonderful scene of Carl Weathers going through the kind of the gospel preacher of like, praise be, Jesus, I have been saved, which is quite funny until they decide, no, you should start hitting people now. So he just starts. Definitely. So having gone through this for 2 minutes, he then just beats them all up. And at that point, that plot is a complete dead end because they don't find the instructions. They don't find anything. They go back to the hotel and he goes, oh, you should ask Dee. Who's Dee? Oh, she's a hairdresser. So the next scene is a hairdresser called Dee, whose big thing is she uses a lot of alliteration. And Dee tells him everything. He doesn't even have to sit down and say, you know, Dee, I'm convinced. It's like Dee is like the font of wisdom. She tells him absolutely.
Well, she's the everything. Oracle in the Matrix, isn't she?
She's the oracle in the Matrix, but with slightly sassier, who can also give you a haircut as well. And she just says the whole reason is that Delaplane is trying to wipe out all the union guys so he can put his own man in there because he wants to use the union not just to make his car business easier, but because he wants to use it as a political base, all this kind of stuff.
Like, but it fundamentally renders the film 100 minutes too long, doesn't it? Because nothing else that happens in it needs to happen.
One trip to D solved everything. And, it's like, oh, well, I will deliver the divine.
It's very Shakespearean in the way that she delivers it. Yeah.
I mean, God bless her. The fact she has to think of all this information and then somehow fit the word letter D in it as well. It's like, D is the hardest working person in this film. So now we've got the plot. I think at this point, again, Jackson tries to lure he kidnaps the union official who's in league with Delaplane. Basically, just by he bops him on the head or whatever, he drags him off to the top of an industrial tower where we can interrogate him. But the idea is this guy will take over from all the other assassinated
union leader.
There are a lot of middle-aged white guys in grey suits who will either get killed or replace the guys who get killed. But before he can do anything, the Swedish ninjas turn up again. I call them Swedish. They're all American, but they have such wonderful curly blonde hair.
Yeah.
Again, one of them was in Die Hard.
it's true. Yeah, you're right.
But they turn up and again, they kidnap Sydney. They get the better of Jackson. They're all prisoners. All is lost. They're about to be. You know,
Delaplane turns up again, doesn't he?
Delaplane turns up, says he's gonna kill Sydney.
He's gonna frame Jackson.
The framing is the best part because the taxi driver who tried to run over Action Jackson is also black. This gives Delaplane the ingenious idea that, hang on, if we put him in the red polo shirt that Action Jackson wears, people will just assume it's him.
Yeah, I mean, at least Delaplane does actually say that to Jackson. He says, in the end, you all look the same anyway, don't you? You know, just as a kind of like a dig in the ribs.
Well, he's also saying, I think, to the crowd there, as in like you're dealing with a load of wasps in the audience.
They were, yeah.
But it is a bit like this is your grand framing device.
That would be so stupid. Because the other guy's assassin a lot taller.
He's quite well built. I mean, it's not like Sammy Davis Jr. who's doing it. It's like, let's put him in a red shirt and people assume he's Carl Weathers.
I would love to see that film.
But so the idea is that the final union official, because he's working through him, there's one more to go. If he assassinates him at this garden party he's throwing tonight, frame Action Jackson, so Action Jackson, but Action Jackson's body will be put in a burning car, so like, you know, his name will be ruined and he'll be dead. Sydney will be dead too, because he's going to kill her. Not really sure why, but he's going to do it because he's a meanie.
There's no reason why she's had a problem here. I thought they liked each other.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
And he will then have the power of the Detroit Union whereby he can become the throne maker for the next president.
Yeah, he's the kingmaker, isn't he? He's more the kingmaker.
So that's all sorted. And then he leaves, having explained his plan to hold the garden party.
Of course, rather than just killing him.
Yes.
And so about 80s trope.
Half the ninja contingent are there to sort him out. And rather than do anything particularly clever, Jackson is saved by Sydney's bodyguard, who appears out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And
with Albert.
With Albert, yeah.
The purse snatcher at the start.
Yeah, so, I mean, they do equally as much work as Jackson does in taking down these guys. There's lots of kind of like killing them with blowtorches and throwing out windows and all this kind of stuff. So they're taken down quite handily. At which point, Jackson has got quite the contingent because he's got Kid Sable on his side now. So it's like he's not going in alone. He pops a tuxedo on to kind of blend in the crowd. But he's the purse snatcher, the boxer. So they all kind of blend into the crowd, into the garden party. And again, I think they basically foil the assassination. Each one of his buddies takes on a different henchman and manages to defeat them in their own way.
Yeah.
And Jackson kind of hunts down
the last one, didn't he? Oh no, he goes to the last one, doesn't he? Say like, smells like a barbecue, and then just fires the fire cannon at him.
He does. Do you know what? That's not a bad one. I think when he kills the butler, it's even worse. He has his line of something like, well, I ran you over, didn't I? It's such a lame one-liner. He like, he runs him over with a car and it's like, ran you over.
It's so Alan Partridge.
So then he takes out, I'll tell you what, this is a good point. He drives his car up the stairs and through the corridors into the room with Delaplane. So that's fantastic.
It's fantastic. I did wonder, by the time he's got to the car, got in it, put the keys in, ignited the engine, started, he could have run up. He could be there ready.
Yeah. And even though, again, Delaplane is played by Craig T. Nelson, who's seen a few years, and Jackson is Carl Weathers, they have what equates to an equal fist fight.
Earlier on that Delaplane is taught by some serious kung fu masters.
I know, he does that thing like the yuppie businessman in his black dojo, dobok doing his thing. And he's also a dirty cheat because his instructor gets beaten and he holds up his hand and Delaplane takes his hand to pull him up and then bashes his arm and breaks his arm.
And he says, lesson over.
He's like, wasn't that guy supposed to be teaching you the lesson? It's like, that's not way to teach you. Anyway, so Delaplane is an action master and gets the better of Jackson until Jackson goes, now I'm pissed off, and he obviously beats Delaplane up handily. Delaplane does the old villain trick of going for his gun, which gives Jackson full license to shoot him dead, he does. At which point, Captain Earl Armbruster and his men burst in without having to inquire anything. Like, Jackson, if he just shot the city's main industrial.
That's why you drive the car up some stairs.
Yeah, and shoot this guy. He's like, couldn't you arrest him? And
I basically, it's like, my desk first thing in the morning,
Lieutenant. So he immediately promotes Jackson for having caused all this carnage. Didn't Jackson get shot in the shoulder as well? So he's like, I know you want his report first thing, but he might want to get to the hospital as well.
Yeah. Not die. The guy that is trying to frame Jackson, the other black guy in the film, the way that he shoots, because he shoots the Union leader, doesn't he? But in the shoulder,
yeah.
He shoots him. He's just hiding in a tree.
Yeah.
He's hiding in a tree in the garden where the party is happening with a rifle. And there's no foliage.
Yeah.
He's just there in the tree. It'd be like he's there next to you. It's just slightly higher in the tree.
I think if someone was in a tree with a gun, I'd just politely ignore them too. Like, me. He's got his thing. I've got my thing.
Yeah, fair point.
I'll actually say in the various carnage, once the man's been shot and everyone starts fighting, the final Union guy who was Delaplane's confederate, was going to take over, starts yelling, "It was Delaplane! It was all Delaplane!" And the goons throw a knife in his chest and kill him.
Yeah, they do.
Just to be sure that there are no loose ends whatsoever. It's like, anyone you've met in this who's a bad guy is killed. Don't worry, folks. and that's it. So then that's it. He connects up with Sidney Ash, who says, I've got a cold turkey and I've been off heroin for like a good 12 hours.
She says 6 hours. She says, I don't know. Look, I've never taken heroin other than in hospital when I've been given diamorphine. But I've never taken it, regularly enough to get hooked on it. But my understanding is it's at the 6 hour mark when all of it kicks in. That's when it gets hard.
Well, if train spotting's any clue, that's when the constipation stops. I mean, Sydney Ash is not going to be her sexiest day. She's making a dash for the toilet, but she promises that he can have her on Thanksgiving, and then
that's what she says. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's such an odd film.
And then they kiss, and the movie's over, and the day is saved. So there we go. And this concludes Action Jackson.
We end with a Paula Abdul Pointer Sisters theme tune at the end, which is like, it's way too electronic to be even remotely danceable or catchy. It's really weird.
But while we leave you, dear listener, to make awkward shuffles on the dance floor, join us when we continue the analysis of Action Jackson.
Wow.
Welcome back, dear listener. I trust you have dangled the criminal out of the window.
I trust that you've popped your testicles
into a nearby jar for safekeeping. when we come to again, why I picked Action Jackson, what we thought of it.
Yeah, yeah. Why did you pick Action Jackson?
I mean, I suppose it was always on my radar of, you know, I've seen a lot of 80s action movies and I haven't seen this one. So it's this is one to tick off the list. I guess it was brought to focus by, again, Carl Weathers passing away last month. So RIP Carl Weathers.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And given, again, I've seen Carl Weathers in a lot of movies, but never as the leading man. I've never seen a Carl Weathers vehicle. I thought, well, let's give Action Jackson a go. Let's see what it's all about.
Well, yeah, very good. I have seen Action Jackson a lot. I've seen it a lot. But I think the last time I saw it was probably in the early 90s. But I have to say, in the late 80s and early 90s, this was my go-to 80s film. It's just ridiculous, really. Like, more so than Die Hard. I used to love Action Jackson. And I think I'm going to regale you with a slightly embarrassing story now, which is maybe why it's stuck in my mind so much.
But if I was pausing at certain times.
Yes! I was. This is the film where I think my dad came to the realization that I was no longer, I was becoming a man, perhaps. So I was, I mean, he didn't catch me in anything more stressful. You know, I wasn't like tweaking one out or anything like that. But I remember him coming into the living room, because this is our local video store, you know, stocked. You know, it was a video store. It would have had Action Jackson. I remember my mum and dad getting it out. Thursday nights was film night. They used to get a video out. My mum and dad, absolutely no concession to certification or kind of whether it was age appropriate or anything. Honestly, it would just be Action Jackson. That looks like a good film. Let's get that out. It's an 18. It's full of heroin addiction and violence. But it's like, now I would have been like 11 watching this, right? Yeah. And we obviously, you could have rented, you rent the film for 2 days and your 3 nights or something in those days, and you give it back at the weekend. It was a Saturday morning. I remember, I thought, my dad usually sleeps in, and I thought, well, I'll watch a bit of Action Jackson. I'll watch a very particular bit of Action Jackson when Sharon Stone walks out the sauna, and I had it pause when she just drops a towel a little bit. And then my dad walked in and I'm like, oh, she's just pausing it, just going to the toilet. But then I had to just leave it. I had to leave it on that scene. It was so obvious what I was doing. And, you know, so that's why, in some respects, that's why Action Jackson holds a special place in my heart, really. So it's a slight bonding session with my dad in a really weird way. I just have an image of my dad hanging around in the living room whilst I was in the toilet, just making the most of the pause.
Yeah, man.
And then my mum walked in, my dad was watching his pause, and he's like, oh, just go to the toilet. I don't know. So, yes, I've watched that no Jackson a lot.
It's amazing that Scott cast as an 18. He's like, why? What? Was it the heroin?
It's the heroin. Yeah, it'll be the drug use. Yeah. I'm sure of it. Because actually, although I do think this film is quite violent, and it's got a lot of kind of gun porn in it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's tame for modern standards, I think, isn't it? I think what you've described is quite right, though. The nudity in it, it's gratuitous, isn't it? There's absolutely no need for it. Whereas a lot of films now, or television programs, there's a lot more nudity, but it feels like it's a lot more contextual, I guess, really. Whereas it isn't in here, so maybe that's part of it. But also that I do think it's the drug use in this, actually, because I remember in the 80s. You could smash someone's skull in and it'd be a PG, right? Honestly, but a bit of TNA and some drug use, smack an 18 on that.
Yeah, you're right there. Although I think you mentioned this actually. There's the syringe that Sydney uses to inject her heroin is like, it's like a comically large syringe, like a child's first medical kit. Because it's not the kind of the plastic disposable syringe that you see in Trainspotting thing. It's like a very large silver thing with the finger holes that you press in, and it's like, is that a stylish way to take heroin?
Well, this is the thing. It looks quite glamorous. Well, it doesn't. But the syringe looks impressive, doesn't it? You think
it's in like a little velvet case, and it's like,
Well, it's the way that Delaplaine gives it to us. Right? So I hear that this is a girl's best friend. You think it's going to be diamonds, and it's a syringe. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's fair enough. What I also realised, obviously, Vanity, she was quite a famous dancer, and she was part of Prince's dance troupe at the time as well. So she was quite famous, but she was a very, very heavy cocaine addict at the time of filming as well. And she's spoken quite candidly. She's died now, but she spoke quite candidly about playing an addict when she would be off set in the evenings and getting absolutely off her face on cocaine. Wow. Yeah. And she died about 10 years ago of complications from drug use. She was off drugs for a very, very long time. She became very religious, but it messed her body up basically.
My goodness. But I would say, though she may have brought that experience of addiction to her performance, she doesn't really cover herself in glory in her performance because she's quite flat.
I agree. I think I want to know what your general thoughts are of the film.
Yeah, that's true. I will get into slacking off the actors.
Yeah.
I would say my first thought was the credits rolled is this feels like a movie ahead of its time. Only because if AI had written an 80s action movie, this is the action movie it would have come out with. We need a loose cannon detective, and he's got to have a love interest, and I don't know how, but there's supposed to be some kind of femme fatale boss wife, and I don't know how, and explosion, and he should chase a guy, and he'll take him down, but I don't know how, and he's going to go to a pool hall and have a fight, and I don't know what that does, but he's going to do it, and then he's going to get the information, I don't know how that's going to happen, and then he's going to win.
It's almost postmodern in many ways because it strips out all of the logic and the chaff for and not even for set pieces, but just for plot movement.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, I can't understand. It's almost like if the film says it, it happens.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't actually have to see anything.
Yeah, and we probably took a long time going through the plot, longer than you think was necessary. But in many ways, this film is a very complicated plot, and it's absolutely so no plot at all.
This is why so I've written this down. It's too complicated.
Yeah, but also no plot at all.
Yeah, because that's why it becomes too complicated as well.
Yeah, because you could ignore everything and just think, oh, Delaplane's the villain. Jackson's gonna take him down. That's what's gonna happen. And it doesn't matter anything else what happens. That's what's gonna happen. So that was my first thought about it, is that, wow, it's a lot of things.
It's peak 80s, isn't it?
It's peak 80s, in right down to the actors. I mean, they're all, you know, tend to be bit parts from other movies, but I think they all put in a good turn. It's like, yeah, they're doing what they're doing. And I think, again, one reason I was glad I chose this is I think Carl Weathers' charisma is a big benefit to this film. I'm not sure if it either carries it or saves it, but he is a charismatic actor. I think he's able to bring this to... A role. What difference is this role? Because this role, it's strange in itself. Because I picked this and I saw the movie poster or the cover of it, and he looks like James Bond, and it's clearly riffing off him. He's in a tuxedo, and Vanity's next to him, like his Bond girl thing. And I thought, is this going to be kind of like almost like the Kingsman thing, where it's like the "I'm going to get you, sucker" of James Bond, and that's why he's called Action Jackson.
That's another good film.
"I'm going to get you, sucker." Yeah, that's good fun.
Yeah, it is.
But
it isn't that, is it?
No, and it's like, is that what he's called, Action? Because he's almost embarrassed by the fact he's called Action Jackson. Whereas
except when Delaplane says, "You have a middle name, don't you? What is it? Excitement, enthusiasm, esprit de corps." He goes, "It's Action." It's like, get it right, man. Yeah. My middle name is Action.
But it also takes a long time for him to get into the action. Until he's chasing down the taxi, we really see, oh, this is Action Jackson in action.
Yeah. I was going to say that as well. It almost by about the halfway mark, I was thinking this should have been called "Not a Lot of Action, Jackson," really, because all of the action happens around him. You know, the union bosses being, killed one by one. The subplot of Vanity and Delaplane and Sharon Sledge. All of the interesting things wasn't happening to him at all. He was a bit flat. He picked up. Don't get me wrong. And then you start having some of the stunt work and you know, he has a role to play in this. I mean, I agree with you. I think that Carl Weathers is very decent in this. I'm not going to go as far as to say good, but he's very decent in this. but by that I mean it's a shame he hasn't been in more films as a lead, because there's potential here. I just don't think this is the film that really I mean, it obviously wasn't the film that set him off, really, was it? Because nothing happened. There was no sequels. There was no franchise. But yeah. It's a bit of a shame because there's something in there with him.
Yeah.
I just don't think the film itself is particularly good around.
No, I think, had it been more, I guess, tongue-in-cheek. Which I think his style lends to that, actually. He's of the, you know, the Arnie Sylvester Sloan. Those are the actors he worked with. And he does that kind of larger-than-life. And it would, you know, something along those lines would suit very well. Whereas this is, again, you could almost imagine, again, a non-physical actor playing Action Jackson. You literally drop the action. But, you know, a Detroit cop chasing down a corrupt official.
Gregory Hines.
Yes.
Honestly, Gregory Hines would be great in Action Jackson.
Yeah. So that was the thought of it. It doesn't seem to know what to do. Like it's a bit odd. Again, vanity's place in the whole thing. I guess having the gangster's girlfriend. Normally, there's something that turns her towards the police. Like she witnesses a murder and realizes that her boyfriend.
There's nothing though, is there?
He just kind of shows up and says, do you want to be part of the plot? Okay.
Yeah, but this is the point about just because you say something and it happens in the film, it doesn't make it make sense, does it?
Yeah. And likewise with again, Sharon Stone's character, you think, and she's presented as a femme fatale at the start. She's poised. She knows she has information they don't. And the other two, she's as daft as a brush. It's like... What?
Yeah.
The sauna suck out all knowledge from her. Because like the idea is you go, oh, I told that arch enemy that you said you hated. I told him everything, but that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah. No!
Clearly not. Also, in the previous scene, you were packing a bag and running for your life. And
Yeah. And in this scene, the butler doesn't know that you've come home. You say to your husband, I crept in through the back. You're in the dark crying. And he's asking you about what you've told the police. And you tell them everything. You're going to get killed. It's so obvious you're going to get killed.
But once again, it was because, you know, that's what needed to happen. I suppose Craig T. Nelson plays a decent villain, but I mean, Della plays a complete scumbag. He's not just a nasty person that, you know, will
he's
step on the common man.
He's not complicated like Alan Rickman in Die Hard, is he? I suppose one of the big problems is this in this film is that there are actors playing roles in this film, and I don't think any of them have any chemistry with anyone else.
None
of them have any chemistry with each other. It's really weird. So I don't, you know, Vanity and Carweathers, I just don't think they have any chemistry whatsoever. Sharon Stone and Carweathers have no chemistry. Sharon Stone and Craig T. Nelson have no chemistry. Craig T. Nelson and Carweathers have no chemistry. No one has any chemistry.
Yeah, it's
so odd.
Yeah, but then you get thinking, you know, what chemistry could Vanity have when she has to play half the movie on heroin and therefore is basically either, you know, a bit spacey or complaining that she needs a hit of heroin? It's like this is not a compelling leading lady stuff to work with.
No, but you're also not given enough information, I think, about the antagonism between Delaplane and Jackson either. So you know that there is some beef. There's beef there, right? And it's been dwelling there for a while, but really it's a sentence delivered by Bill Duke. And then the next scene is that they're meeting again going, yeah, you're a bastard, aren't you? Yeah, you're a bastard. And you think, well, this is an example of that, you know, the film just saying, yeah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it because just accept this. And there comes a point where you've accepted so many things that there isn't enough in it to be meaningful. And so it becomes complicated, but you can't hang on to anything. There's nothing solid to hang on to. So I was thinking to myself, I'm not an idiot. Surely I'm not an idiot, right? Why don't I understand what's happening in this film? Why do I have no idea what's going on? Because I've watched it. I've watched every scene in sequence, I think.
Yeah.
I think I watched everything in sequence. And it's a simple 1980s film where not really much happens. Why am I so bewildered? Why am I lost?
It's because they take every opportunity to make Delaplane just even worse. He's not just a businessman, you know, who's rich and successful. He's one that when he's training to fight, will injure his teacher through a nasty trick. He's yeah. not just someone who murders his wife. He's someone who murders his wife and then kisses her corpse afterwards just to show how weird he is. He's not yeah. someone that's having an affair. He's having an affair and then injecting her with heroin and just leaving her naked
it's
on the bed.
It's too much, isn't it?
It's too much. And even the point when you think, I've got the plot now. He's a car maker. They're car unionists. He's killing them to smooth the wheels. Even they say, you know, he's surely not just killing them to make his car factory better. He's like, no, I'm not. He's like, you're not? I thought that's exactly
that's exactly what you're doing, isn't it?
That's your motive. He's like, no, but I'm going to be president as well. I was like, oh, right.
Okay. Yeah, he's like, you might as well, I'm going to be god of the world. Yeah, he like, might as well have said that.
Yeah, it's like the car factory was enough for me. You know, I'm happy to accept that you're killing me.
Yeah. Keep it a local story. Set in Detroit. That's fine. Yeah. You know,
yeah, it's Jackson local... versus the president.
It's really weird. Yeah, just stuff. It's stuff like that where I just.
It's like
he'd
open a door and there'd like be a rocket sign. It's like, I'm also going to blackmail the world.
I know.
That was the
and
next
also,
thing to go to.
His car adverts are insane.
Yes.
Haley's. You know, and it's like this car flying around. But like, I mean, a prime example of it is when Jackson goes to find this person whose testicles are in the jar, as you said. And the thing is, right, I mean, that scene, everything in that scene is fine. You know, it's quite entertaining, isn't it? And then Jackson does the kind of religious repertory and all that kind of stuff. It's quite fun. But yeah. I kept thinking in that scene, have I missed a scene before this where this is explained why this is happening? And because of that, I got confused.
Yeah, no,
I started losing interest.
Yeah, and I just thought, I'll hang in there, because I'm sure at some point it's going to tell me why there's testicles in a jar. Is this a character we should be knowing about? Is like...
I don't know. He says we should be. But then he says we should believe that he has beef with Delaplane. Well, I don't know why. I don't know, other than Delaplane being an arsehole, that's right. But what's that got to do with Action Jackson?
Oh, dear me.
You know, but despite all of that, I can't say I wasn't entertained by the film.
I'll tell you one thing is that again, Delaplane has got a good roster of you know, henchmen hanging around.
He does,
like,
doesn't he?
He's and I thought they didn't all get very good send-offs. Like literally one of them got punched by the boxer Fats he was Al Leong. He was the guy from Die Hard. And you thought, you know, surely he's gonna have a bit more of an ending than that. But no, he just gets punched. Because Jackson
punched,
brings
yeah.
along all his mates to take these guys out. It's like, shouldn't Jackson be working his way through them, you know, in the traditional way? He just runs over one person. Is that you've been run over? And then
but this
on.
Is what this is what I mean by not much action Jackson. Because
yeah.
Other than running at 45 miles an hour to catch up with the car.
Which
right?
is impressive.
Yeah, it's very impressive, right? But, you know, the film should have been called Speedy Jackson then or something like that, not Action Jackson, because he does that and he jumps on the car. That's fine. Other than that, I mean, what does he do? And then he drives a car up some stairs. I mean, fair enough. That's pretty action. That's pretty action-y, right? But for the rest of the film, he's just wandering. He's wandering around having people tell him the answers to the film.
Yeah.
like the Robert Davi or the hairdresser.
Yeah,
basically those two scenes are the whole film.
Yeah, and you want that kind of like Martin Riggs thing of like, oh my god, I can't believe he's done that. I can't believe he's just, you know, ridden a motorbike up a building and then jumped off it and all this kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, there's not a lot of stunt work in this and when there is, it's happening elsewhere. When the I think they're called the Invisible Men, these ninjas I've been referring to.
Yes,
the Invisible Men, who again we learn all about through D. It's like their entire backstory comes from D, that they were some kind of mafiosi gang.
Yeah, that sounds like a good story, doesn't it?
Yeah, but also the Invisible Men fold quite easily. Like they're one good punch up away and they're done. And up to that point, they were just tearing through Union officials and their bodyguards.
Well, this is the thing. I think there is some good stunt work in this, but as you say, it doesn't involve Carl Weathers. At the start, when the guy's shot out of the building, that's good stunt work. That's a man on fire falling from a building, right? That's really happened. So that's, you know, good work. This comes back down to the kind of analog sense of 1980s. If they're blowing up a building or someone's falling out of a building on fire, they're really blowing that shit up. Excuse my French.
Yeah.
You know, that's happening, right? So I quite like that. In fact, I'm all up for that. That's my catnip, that is. That's like, yes,
absolutely.
Wow, a man is dressed in some fire-resistant suit, he's been set alight, and he's jumped out of a building that then explodes.
It's great stuff.
That's just incredible, right? I'm a simple man when it comes down to it. That's what I want. That's what I want. It would have been more true back in the day if my dad had walked in with me pausing that scene. Right? You know, that's the scene I would have got my rocks off at. But then there has to be another 40 minutes of Carl Weathers walking about being told the plot.
The drug dealer he beats up and throws out a window is Sonny Landham, another Predator alumnus.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
That was half the fun, actually, spotting, it's that guy, because there's a lot of that guy.
There's a lot of that guys in this, isn't there? I feel bad about saying this, but I think that Vanity is awful.
Yeah.
In this. Oh, my God. I honestly felt myself cringing, and I just, I don't know, I just found her performance in this just absolutely abysmal. I know that she was, I think she won the Golden Raspberry in 1988 for this, and I can honestly see why.
I think she was nominated for it.
Oh, was she nominated?
I liked her singing. Her singing was quite nice.
Oh, yeah, sure. She's a singer and a dancer, so fair enough.
When she started acting, I thought, you were brought into this movie as a singer.
Yeah, exactly. And I tend to find that, you know, with kind of Golden Raspberries and the Razzie Awards, I tend to find them a bit mean. Because they tend to focus on films that really, you know, they're bad, right? Yeah. Who cares about that? They should focus on films that are malicious or morally, you know, morally wrong, all that kind of stuff. They don't bother. So I tend to find them a bit mean. I don't like them that much. But I do think that her nomination here is well justified. Because she's bloody awful in it. She's awful. And I don't remember her being this bad in this film. I couldn't understand what she was saying half the time. I know that she's on heroin in this. It's fair enough. But I still need to be able to... You need to be able to enunciate your words so that I can hear what you're saying.
I don't know, though. I mean, it's not a role that gives you much. I think... she's not very good in it. But I think it would be hard to find a good actress, get a half decent performance.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean,
it's a hard ask.
If this was The Color Purple and she was in that doing this role, I'd be thinking this film has sunk because of this. But I suppose she's performing badly in Action Jackson.
Yeah.
In the end, it's not that much of a crime, is it? But again, you know, so this is one of those films where sometimes you can say there was a lot of terrible things in this, but you know what? I was never bored and I enjoyed it. That's partially true here, but I think I err more on the side of what on earth was that about? The other thing I struggled with it was the tone of the film is a bit odd as well. So there's a lot of violence in it, but there's also a kind of like tongue-in-cheek approach to it as well. And that can work a lot of the time, but it felt a bit like they didn't quite know what to do with it, really. They wanted a hard-boiled actioner, but they didn't want to go down it too far, so they had to lighten it up with some kind of interest, you know, some weird comedy. Because again, Craig T. Nelson's character in this is irredeemable. He's so dark. And as a consequence, Action Jackson becomes a little bit of a jokey figure when I don't think he should be.
Yeah. And again, just in terms of how this movie, you know, could be punched up in the script itself, that, you know, the dialogue and the one-liners could be improved. It's you know, it could still be as schlocky and as, you know, knockabout.
But
if he's going to kill someone, have a good line to do it.
don't say that's you run over. Exactly. That's exactly the point, isn't it? If this is a film with one-liners, make them count, please. Having said that, this film was a massive success.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it doubled its money. It was unexpected, and it doubled its money, which surprises me why they haven't had a sequel to it. Really?
I think there was an unnamed sequel where Carl Weathers was another cop, but, you know, doing the similar thing, but it wasn't an official sequel.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
But it didn't become a franchise. Again, 80s weren't really that much about franchises.
No, they weren't
sequels.
Really, were they? Well, yeah. It was cheap as well to produce things, wasn't it? So if I were to kind of write a letter to my 11 or 12 year old self, I'd probably say, don't spend so much time watching Action Jackson. Because in about 30 years, you'll watch it again and go, huh?
See, I think, yeah, I think with the across the kind of the spectrum of 80s action movies, this had enough ingredients in it, I think, just in terms of the stars and
the
premise.
Yeah.
This had the ingredients in it to be, you know, a commando. And if it had truly elevated itself with a good script and some, you know, just a couple of different actors in the main roles and a director with a lighter touch, it could have been a Tango and Cash.
Oh, but I think
it slipped and became a Cobra.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's very good. That's very good. Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Yeah, I can see why it's not really stood the test of time. In the way that some of the best actioners from the late 80s particularly have. Very much so. But there we go. That's Action Jackson. Anything else?
No, I think, again, in terms of, you know, what films you might like to watch, you just named three of them.
I mean, it's not a film that's in any way related to Action Jackson. I've got to be Sean Connery there. So there's another film that I used to watch a lot of when I was, you know, preteen, but into double figures, I guess, really, right? 10, 11, 12 kind of age. And it was, again, a similar feeling in the sense that my mum and dad would have got it out of the video store. It would have been on heavy rotation and so on and so forth. And it's called Deadly Pursuit. And it's got. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Get out of here. You know what I'm talking about? That is almost going to be one of my picks. I bloody love Deadly Pursuit.
Yeah, it's got Tom Berenger and Sidney Poitier in it, yeah? First Sidney Poitier film for 11 years, right? And it's really, really good.
Clancy
Brown. I think it's a classic film. But that is forgotten in time. And I was looking into Action Jackson a little bit, and this debuted in third place in the box office behind Good Morning Vietnam and Deadly Pursuit.
Whew.
So it came out the same year. It came out the same week as Deadly Pursuit, and it was behind that. And it made me remember what a good film Deadly Pursuit is.
Yeah.
And that's a really good buddy cop buddy movie.
Oh yeah. I mean, don't watch out for future things. I may well just pick Deadly Pursuit. That's one
it's worth it, isn't it? Yeah, I was thinking that myself. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
We've shown our hand now, but yeah, anyway. Yeah. So all done there. Right.
Finished, by the way.
with that, I complete my segue and we can get the paper. We'll give it a scores. What scores will Action Jackson take? Will the memory carry James over into an extra floating Crombie head? Or will we just pause on the scores we will? Welcome back to the final leg, well-muscled though it may be, of Action Jackson. Where we will give it its scores and then learn the exciting bit about what we'll be watching next month. I do hope it's Deadly Pursuit.
It isn't Deadly Pursuit, but I do think we should do Deadly Pursuit. We should just do a one-off.
A one-off? Aren't any of these
like
by
Oppenheimer?
One-off. A very special Crombie's Deadly Pursuit.
Oh, that is esoteric, right?
Oppenheimer and Deadly Pursuit. They sit really close to the shelf.
Oppenheimer, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and Deadly Pursuit. They're our specials. We appeal to a very niche crowd. Do you like Tom Berenger films from the 80s? Well, you'll love Weekend at Crombie's.
With that tantalizing in mind, we shall give first Action Jackson our scores. I think, I forget tradition, but I'm going first. I think I can go no better than saying I expected a commando. I hoped for a Tango and Cash. I got a Cobra. It's going to be, with that, two floating Crombie heads for me. It's R.E.P. Carl Weathers, but again, this was not your legacy.
No. Before I give my score, I would like just to take a moment to appreciate Carl Weathers' physique. And I think it does say something about where my life has gone, that I am now more impressed with Carl Weathers' physique than I am Sharon Stone or Vanity's. But there we go. This is how life takes you down these paths. Nostalgia is a funny thing, isn't it? I was so excited about watching Action Jackson, and I really, really wanted to like it more than I did. It's got some decent moments in it. Some of the early scenes with the union bosses being murdered is it's good 80s work, but I think in general that the film needs a sprucing up, and I agree with you completely, Hugh. It's very much a Cobra rather than a Commando, which is a shame. It's two disembodied Crombie heads for me as well.
Oh, there we go. So I'm sorry for dredging up a beloved film of your childhood and stomping all over it. You could have just left it where it was. It's happy memory.
Yeah, but truth is there to be disputed, isn't it? So that's fine.
Indeed. I've also kind of spoiled my run of flawless films now in the second month of choosing. I had a 5 out of 5, and I'll take us all the way down to 2 and 2. Anyway, but what are we doing next month? I'd love to know.
Right, for the April edition of Weekend at Crombie's, we will be watching Virtuosity.
Ooh.
Virtuosity.
Rings a bell, but say no more. And with that, we shall leave you to towel off your pectoral muscles. Should you have any?
I've not seen my pectoral muscles for decades.
to harken back to this. There's a picture of myself when I was 2 years old at my birthday party.
Oh, I remember you told me this before.
I spilled red pop all over my T-shirt, so they're taking the T-shirt off, and I thought, that's the best upper body I'll ever have.
you were the apex predator then, weren't you?
Oh, my goodness. It was a... Well, I mean, what went wrong? Probably the birthday cake that swiftly followed. It was downhill from there. Just one more slice, and that was it.
Yeah, exactly.
With that, we shall wish you all a very happy and a very healthy weekend at Crombie's.
Good evening, all.
Weekend at Crombie's.
Very well. We shall leave you to imbibe heroin of your choice by whatever syringe you like.
Are there choices of heroin?
Well, there's the regular kind of the plastic thing, or if you're a true designer, if you're an epicure of heroin, you clearly want the massive silver cylinder of syringe from the 1890s.
if we were really street, we would have said,
which of course we are.
Yeah, we would have said, yes, of course there are different types of heroin. You can have opium. You can have heroin. You could have smack. You know, all of this, but no, we went with there's the plastic syringe, the metal syringe from the 19th century.
Well, I think if you've had your squash from a plastic beaker or a nice chilled glass, you know there's a difference.
You do know there's a difference. I wonder if your veins can tell the difference.
I don't know, but I'm qualified to speak on Robinson's Orange Squash more than I am about heroin.
Yeah. To be honest, if someone offered me heroin, I've never been in a situation where that's ever happened, and I'm never likely to be. Just in case anyone from work is listening, I'm never likely to be. It's never likely to happen. I would be absolutely terrified of the situation I've found myself in, more than being intrigued as to what it might be like.
Yeah, you'd want to have us escalate, didn't you?
You would. You'd be like, does God know that this is me? How have I found? How has the plot developed? It would be like me watching Action Jackson. Suddenly, I'm in a heroin den. I'm like, how did I get here? Wasn't there a scene before this?
Just the plot required you to be there.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.